Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey everyone, I'm Grant Lifman, and this is the Run in Plays podcast presented by Wendy's, and we have a very special guest today. This is Dan Pfeiffer. He's an author, he's a co-host of Pod Save America, one of my favorite pods, and also a former senior advisor to President Obama. Dan, thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
So let's get this one out of the way first. Now, obviously, we're going to talk some politics, and you know, your career is based in politics, but you are a passionate NBA fan and, more importantly, a diehard 76ers fan. Am I right?
That is correct. It is a painful experience these days, but I am a diehard 76ers fan my whole life.
So, I mean, in that case, we're definitely going to have to dive into how Embiid and Simmons will both be on the Warriors next season, apparently. So we'll have to dive into that. Now,
I'd like to figure out how that works.
Yes, exactly. So, later on, I'm going to have to bring up some tweets you did in the past, and don't worry, nothing bad.
Absolutely.
But we'll have to get some answers to these. But first, I have one right here, and it says, August 22nd, 2017, this is your tweet. You said, I am a Sixers fan since birth, but as an SF resident, I root for the Warriors against everyone but the Sixers. I'm not proud of it. Please explain.
So I moved to the Bay Area in 2015. And so I arrived here right for the 73 win season. My 40th birthday year, my wife gave me 10 tickets, 10, like a 10 game package. So I went to a bunch of awesome games that year, including, which was quite a guess, one of our friends helped her pick the games because she's far from an NBA fan. And we picked that last game against, God, I can't remember, but the Grizzlies, I think. The very last game of the season where they clinched the 73 wins. Wow. Was in there. So I got to see the whole thing.
Wow.
And that was the 2015 was the last year of the process 76ers. It was the year that Embiid only played 31 games. Simmons was drafted, but was not playing because of a hurt foot. And so that was the year, this had been true basically for years, is like I root for the Sixers, but then there's like one other team that I will follow and root for. And the Warriors was a tough one because I went to Georgetown and Steph Curry basically ended our basketball program. That loss to Davidson in the 2008 second round of the NCAA tournament. And that's the last time Georgetown has, they've won one NCAA tournament game since then. And the program has completely collapsed. And so took me a lot to get over Steph Curry doing that to us. But if you live here and you get to watch the Warriors, you know, particularly that, that year of the Warriors and then the KD Warriors after that, every night on television, like, you know, you're a basketball fan, you can't pass that up because that is some of the best basketball you ever see in your life. And Oracle was the best place I'd ever seen a game. You know, none of the accoutrements of a nicer arena with like really good food, and but in terms of like environment for a game, Oracle is second to none.
Well, you know, it's not fair. I think a lot of times people, and it's for Warriors or Lakers in the past, people say if you like a team now, all of a sudden, especially if you live in the city, you're a bandwagon fan or a fair weather fan. You know, at some point, you're allowed to just enjoy the experience of a basketball game. And if it's a really fun team, you're allowed to like the team. I don't know why that's such a, I mean, I guess if you were talking trash about everyone else and saying, right, I'm a Warriors diehard, then maybe, yeah, you're a bandwagon guy. But, like, you're allowed to say, I really like a team.
Yeah, and I think you should give credit to the Warriors season ticket holders who were there through all the down years. Like, they get to puff out their chest more than everyone else for having done that. And I think even as the Sixers, like, this year was not great, but the people who stuck with the Sixers through all the process years get to enjoy, you know, Embiid and Simmons in a couple 50-win years more than other folks. But there's also something about being in a city when the entire city is obsessed with the sports experience. And it's like this communal thing, you know, and like to walk down anywhere in San Francisco in those years and to see, particularly the 73-win season, where every bar would be packed with people watching the game, no matter what kind of bar it was. Could be like a, you know, a techie cocktail, craft cocktail bar, or like a dive bar on Valencia or Mission, still packed with people watching the game of all, like, that's a cool thing. And if more people want to like share in that experience in their city, like, at like, we should not knock that. Like, that is great.
Right. Right. I guess, you know, at the end of the day, it's pretty much just Twitter versus reality of just like,
yeah,
just making everyone feel bad versus
of course
reality of, yeah, I guess that's how it works. But yeah, we'll come back to more tweets because you definitely had some good Warriors themed tweets in the past. But before we get back to the Warriors and before we talk about who you need back in a trade for Embiid and Simmons, I do want to get your opinion on how the NBA handled the pandemic and creating the bubble, because from all accounts, it feels like the bubble was very, very successful, because it just, you know, we didn't see positive cases while they were there. And it felt like it just showed how, if you follow safety guidelines that are out there, you can limit the spread of this disease.
I think by all accounts, from at least from a public health perspective, the NBA absolutely nailed what they were supposed to do. There was, the testing was good. There were not serious, like, at no point was anything like we're seeing in the NFL where games are being moved around. By all accounts, the players, with the exception of Lou Williams's affinity for wings at certain establishments, abided by all the rules. I mean, the one violation was Rashawn Holmes, who like stepped over the line to pick up a Postmates order and had to miss 10 days or something. But other than that, and, you know, and it's, I think it's really hard. And a lot of the players talked about the mental health consequences of being isolated from your friends and family for such a long period of time. But, you know, I don't think any other sports league could do this the way the NBA did, because of the logistics of the number of players on an NBA team, the fact that they play several days a week, that you can, you know, NBA basketball courts are obviously smaller than football fields or baseball stadiums. But, I mean, I don't think there's any question that the NBA is the best run sports league by far, in terms of both, you know, strategically thinking through organization, caring about the players, right? Having a working relationship with the players that made this work. And I think Adam Silver and everyone involved, players, coaches, everyone deserves a huge bit of kudos for doing this right. And it was like, I was very skeptical that it would happen. I was very skeptical about the decision to, I understand the logistics of doing it in Orlando because of, you know, just the facilities there and ESPN owning them, Disney owning them. But, you know, cases were skyrocketing through the roof there. And it is sort of this vision, like, not to get into politics, but the NBA bubble, how it worked, is an alternative vision of how things could have looked if people had been as careful as they had taken science as seriously as they had, and had built up the capacity in terms of testing and other equipment to do this right.
Yeah, and you know, to agree with you, I also was skeptical. My co-host Kareth Burke and I, we would go on this podcast and we're like, we truly hope it works out, but, you know, we just don't know if sports are ready, and especially going to Florida and everything. So, but we were hoping that afterwards we would say we were wrong, it went great. And I think, again, by all accounts, it was incredibly successful. But the NBA is hoping, as are, you know, we're seeing experimental bringing fans back into stadiums right now. The NBA is hoping their next season, which probably they're hoping to start in January, February, will have fans in the arena. Do you think this idea of rapid testing at the gates is something that is A, feasible, and B, something that, I mean, should be done?
No, I don't think it's feasible. You've seen this in real life. The rapid tests are not very reliable. You're getting both false positives and false negatives at that event at the White House that led to so many people, including the President of the United States, most likely getting coronavirus. Everyone who walked into that event was rapid tested. It clearly missed things. And the only truly effective tests are these things called the PCR tests, the ones where they stick the swab up your nose and take longer to process. And so I understand all the economic incentives of having fans. And I think, but it is very different than football. Football stadiums are huge. They are by and large outdoors. you can easily space people out there in ways you are much harder to do in an NBA arena. And I think you'll very likely end up in a situation where it differs by state, where the Miami Heat and the Orlando Magic could very easily have people in there because the governor of Florida is probably gonna be less careful than the governor of California. I would be shocked if you had anything more than 10 to 20% capacity at a Warriors, Lakers, Clippers game, Kings game next season, and up until there's mass distribution of a vaccine, because indoors is just very, very, very different than outdoors. And so the NFL is a little, and baseball have a little more freedom to do this than the NBA does. And I think the NBA is going to want to be very careful, even right. if the, you know, even if the economics are really tough to do this without fans, because it's the gate, you know, the gate is a pretty important part of the profit plan.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, you know, as you were saying, mass distribution of, you know, testing, and then also a vaccine as well, that's obviously a hope. But the question then becomes, does the NBA try to wait as long as possible until there's new technology out? But the problem is that how long can you wait before it's already, you know, we're already in summer all of a sudden, and we're still waiting for something, because it seems like, according to reports, mass distribution of vaccines won't be happening anytime soon. So it might be a situation, as you're saying, that the NBA just has to start with some states not being allowed to have fans in the stands.
And I think the NBA, one takeaway from this, as successful as the bubble was, both in terms of the public health and the basketball, I mean, the basketball is, I think, superb on a whole, mm-hmm. very different, but superb in a lot of ways, is I don't think the NBA is going to want to go up against the NFL again, right? It's just, it's completely unfair situation to have, you know, to have the game six of the NBA finals up against a Sunday Night Football game, which is, you know, every week the most watched television event in all of America, Sunday Night Football. And so I can see, like, there was a world in which you could try to wait and hope you would have a vaccine and sort of redo this timeline that they did this time. You know, maybe start a little bit earlier and have them closer to a full season. But I think they'll have a lot of incentive for TV ratings with new television rights coming up in the not too distant future to do this at a time in which they're the primary sporting event on television nationally as well as regionally.
Right. Absolutely. And it's been known that players really do, you know, for their own CBA, they like having summers with their families as well. So they got to, you know, figure that out, because there's been a push for a while to move the NBA season to, you know, why don't they start in December, et cetera. But, you know, there is a lot of give and take when it comes to that. So that's something that they obviously have to figure out. But let's go to the social initiatives that the NBA is doing and the players. And I just want to get your thoughts on how the NBA players use their platform and their fame to try to make important societal changes. And it includes LeBron James, who's been active, I mean, I guess, in the political landscape in a long time, and just in terms of being, I mean, I guess, active just in terms of creating charitable organizations. But it started More Than a Vote campaign. Even Draymond Green of the Golden State Warriors is involved in that. What's your take on what they've done?
I think More Than a Vote is an incredibly impressive and sophisticated political operation. Oftentimes, athletes, actors, other influencers get involved in these things, and it's more about PR than anything else. And that's good, right? Like, you know, maybe you show up at a couple of rallies, you do a video here or there, but what they're doing is a very sophisticated understanding of how to make sure people get the right to vote. The efforts to get cities with NBA arenas to turn those NBA arenas into voting centers to reduce lines and so more people can vote safely during a pandemic. The effort to recruit poll workers that More Than a Vote is doing, they brought on some pretty sophisticated political operatives to help them. And it's incredibly impressive. And this is one hell of a year for LeBron in every sense of the word. But it's going to be very, very impactful. And I think it is a model for how famous people, whether they're athletes, actors, musicians, can leverage their platform and their fame and their resources to make real impact, not just sort of the typical celebrity sort of PR influence campaign, but something that involves actual on the ground making a difference and that combines sort of LeBron's his fame, but also his experience in production and production companies and content that he's done with the barbershop, with shop, and everything else, and with people who have a real political know-how to make a difference. I've been incredibly. I know people who work there. I've been sort of briefed on a lot of things they're doing, and I am incredibly impressed by the work they're doing, and very grateful that LeBron is doing it.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people, a lot of NBA fans or sports fans may have may not like LeBron for many different reasons, probably because he's really good and beat up on their teams, or maybe they don't like the way he, you know, presents himself on the court, whatever. But the point is that LeBron has done some incredible things off the court. He's always been doing this. And so it is nice to hear stories of this. And I feel like, more importantly, we've seen a lot of it in our faces since, you know, the Black Lives Matters movement and a lot of different social changes that need to happen in society. And, you know, do you think, so they called it a boycott. It wasn't a boycott. It was more of a work stoppage or a strike. Yep. Do you think it was effective in getting people's attention?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. It is a truly unprecedented thing to happen at scale during, you know, where there was all this focus on the NBA. You have it led by what at the time was perhaps the favorite or the near favorite to be the NBA champion in the Milwaukee Bucks, the reigning MVP, two-time MVP being involved in it. And so I think it was very effective. And just the whole thing, like, obviously there is so much, we cannot rely on basketball players in the NBA to drive social change in America. That is not, that is something for our political leaders and American citizens to do. But like, we should, like, there are very real things about, you know, these NBA arenas becoming voting centers. That's a consequence of that work stoppage. That's a very big thing. Very real money, including from some NBA owners who probably otherwise would not be giving a ton of money to racial justice organizations that came out of this. And on top of that, I don't think, it seems like a small thing, but the fact that the NBA finals were played with the word Black Lives Matter written on the court is like a gigantic deal compared to where we were in this country just a few months ago. Like, that was seen as a pejorative term. It was being politicized between the other side, and that a billion-dollar industry filled with some of the most famous people in the world chose to write that on their court and put that for the entire world to see, and that every corporate sponsor who sponsors the NBA would have to be associated with that is a very big deal, right? It's not going to change everything in this country. It's not going to end racism. We're not going to stop structural racism. But it is an important thing, and it's an important thing that athletes can do, and the NBA did. And it is to the great credit, I think, of the NBA leadership and Adam Silver in particular, that they went along with that, right? Like, it's just different. That, and I also will say, this goes to LeBron, and, you know, and to Chris Paul and some others, is if the biggest stars in the game were not willing to push for this, it would not happen, right? No one in, probably in professional sports, has more influence than LeBron James. So if he had not wanted to play in this bubble, if he had not been willing to engage in a work stoppage, if he had not been willing to push for some of these things, they would not have happened. If it had just been a couple of player, you know, more mid-level players, less famous players, players of the, you know, somewhat like the NFL could, you know, in the worst, most evil way, but they could shut down someone like Colin Kaepernick on his own, right? But if that had been Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Alvin Kamara, whoever the most famous NBA NFL players were at the time, like, it would have been much harder for Roger Goodell and the owners to do that. But when you have LeBron and Chris Paul and the Milwaukee Bucks and Giannis Antetokounmpo doing this, that's just that they have leverage, and they use their leverage in a way that I thought was incredibly effective and impressive, and get a lot of, and they should, I think they've, like, there's a lot more work to do that will continue now that the NBA season is over, of course. Both for the next 3 weeks of this election and beyond. But, like, it should not, I don't think what happened in that moment should get lost in the significance of it. And I think the path it paved for athlete activists, it forced forced the NFL's hand in some ways. There are more things happening in the NFL because of what the NBA did, and they should get credit for that.
And, you know, I'd be remiss not to also mention the WNBA as well.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Like, their work stoppage, Renee Montgomery, who took this season off in order to work entirely on social justice issues. I interviewed her on Pod Save America. She's incredibly impressive. She's working with LeBron and Draymond on More Than a Vote. And so the NBA, to, you know, the WNBA, the NBA, to their credit, have led the way here. And WNBA, even more than the NBA, has been pushing on these issues longer and more aggressively. It gets less attention because some of the players are not as famous as LeBron and others, but they've been pushing for equal pay and a whole lot of other things for a very long time, and should get a lot of credit for, you know, in some ways, even pushing the NBA players to do more here.
Absolutely. And the fact that you mentioned the NFL, the fact that you got the NFL and Major League Baseball to do certain things, even NASCAR, you know, made changes, that you got to start with the WNBA and NBA to push those changes. And I mean, it's pretty incredible that we've got to that point. And I know we even refer back to Colin Kaepernick 4 years ago, but you're right. It's months ago. I never would have believed that was possible. So, yeah. I mean, it's good to see those changes at the very least.
Wendy's has a breakfast worth talking about. And with this menu, you can't let anyone miss out. Go tell somebody about Wendy's breakfast. Available at participating U.S. Wendy's.
And, okay, so definitely talked about, you know, the coronavirus and the way changes can be made. But one more question about politics overlapping with sports here. And that has to do with President Obama and basketball. So how did you overlap with the time that President Obama and Steph Curry started this friendship?
They got to know each other. It was interesting. So if you flash back to 2008, we were doing a bus tour in Pennsylvania during the NCAA tournament. We had a TV on the bus, and this was, I guess this was, it was Curry's last season at Davidson. And we watched all the games on the bus between stops. And it was funny because Reggie Love, who had been President Obama's body guy on the campaign in the White House, was on the national championship team at Duke, but he had also been Steph Curry's camp counselor for many years in North Carolina. And so he was talking up Curry the whole time. And so I don't think they became actual friends and started playing golf until after I left. It was Curry, after that 15 championship team, got very involved. He did some public service announcements with the First Lady and some stuff for the Affordable Care Act and Let's Move. And that's when they got to know each other. But he had played golf with, I think they had maybe golfed once before I left, and with Ray Allen. Because the president had a very specific theory that great shooters were the best golfers because they had the capacity to do the best repetitive motion, right? So you shoot the same way every time. And, you know, and he was, I mean, at least the last time I talked to him about NBA players golfing, Ray Allen and Steph Curry were the best golfers he had played with, the best basketball player golfers he had played with. I wasn't there for all of that friendship, but they had been, I talked to the president after I'd left, and we had talked about it. And when I interviewed Steve Kerr for Pod Save America back in 2017, I think, and I was there, and it was right after Curry had just, it was the very, very beginning of the season, and Curry had just played golf with President Obama very recently, and all of the sort of, I guess, the Warrior security guys had known about it and been part of it or knew about it and were talking to me about it. So it was very, very, very cool. And the president, obviously as an NBA fan, sort of geeks out on the Warriors among other teams.
Yeah, I was so lucky that I had a friend working within the West Wing in 2016. And just as, you know, in the last year of President Obama's administration. And I went into the West Wing and I got a tour of it. And I thought it was so great how many photos on the wall were with Barack and Michelle. And then you have Steph and Aisha. And I would say there was a good five or six of them just throughout. And you're like, the Currys are definitely present in this West Wing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's dealt with like the sort of the Obama NBA fraternity. You know, he's become very close with the Currys. They become very close friends with the Mornings when I was there, and when he would go spend time in Florida on vacation, they would vacation with the Mornings and play golf with Alonzo. And, you know, and Magic obviously was someone the president got to know very well, and a bunch of folks from the Bulls. He, for the president's 50th birthday, which was 2010 maybe or 11, I can't remember, they arranged for a bunch of NBA players to come play basketball with them. So they all came to the White House. And so it was unbelievable. This was I don't think there were any Warriors there, but it was LeBron, Wade, Chris Paul, Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Maya Moore was there. Magic Alonzo came out of retirement to play in that game. Kobe came. This was actually super cool. Kobe came, and but he was recovering from a knee surgery, and so he did not play. He just sat, and he and Bill Russell, who also came, sat in front of me, and we got to go watch the game. Sat in front of me on the bleachers and just talked hoops the whole time. It was like truly, and I was a true. I mean, this sounds terrible now, but I was a true Kobe hater back then, and I like got all disrespect for Kobe because just like watching him, sort of like really. I sort of thought, like the caricature of Kobe as this super cocky Jordan wannabe sort of megalomaniac sort of thing. But he like paid such respect to Bill Russell, just like picked his brain on hoops and life for like an hour waiting for the game to start, and it was very, very cool. And he was so nice to all the staff who helped arrange. There were all these kids. They brought all these kids from inner city DC who were mentees of White House staff to watch the game. And a bunch of wounded warriors came, and Kobe could not have, and LeBron too, could not have been more friendly. It must have been 2010 because this was right after the decision. This was like LeBron's first post-decision public appearance. And it was very interesting to see him in that environment.
That's awesome. Yeah, I remember reading about that and just seeing the photos and some video from that. That was so cool. And that it sounds like basketball was just really intertwined into the West Wing and you guys. And did you ever get to play against the president?
We played. I was not part of his regular games. But I played once, and we shot around like all the time when I travel with him all over the place. And we would often be in high school gyms and would shoot around beforehand. And I remember one time early on when I was working for him, we were in this gym in New Hampshire. And so like the event was outside. And so you would wait for all the, like the member of Congress who's introducing you to speak and all the pre-program. And so he's like on his phone or something, and Reggie Love and I are shooting hoops. And I was a very, very, very mediocre high school / DC rec league basketball player. And I was coming off an ankle injury. I hadn't played in a while, so I'm in a suit. And so I go around, and so Reggie and we're taking turns shooting. So we're sort of going around the 3-point line. And I hit, very unlike me, I hit like 5 in a row. And Obama's like he stops. I can see him watching me now, and I'm getting like a little nervous about it. I know he's going to talk. And so, but I hit all my shots, and he looks at me and goes, it's like, Pfeiffer, that's a pretty good shot, but I'm not sure you can get that off in a game. I just get like a little credit. I'm in a suit and tie and, you know, like dress shoes on the hardwood, and you're still talking shit to me. He loves hoops. He loved playing hoops. He loved watching hoops. He loved talking about it. It was like his moment of normalcy was to talk about the game the night before, who would do well in the playoffs, the draft, his NCAA bracket with people, like as if he was just the guy he was before he got sort of on this rocket ship trip to the White House, where he was just a normal guy who loved basketball. Right. And so if he could talk about that with staff or friends, that felt like holding on to this other part of his life. And it was obviously super fun for us to talk about that stuff with him. That's awesome. There was always a gate, like you have TV on Air Force One, and there was always, if it was basketball season and we were flying back at night, whatever the TNT or ESPN game of the night was always on in the room. He was killing time in as we would flew.
That's awesome. And I know the Warriors themselves were very thankful that their run coincided with Obama's term, so they got to go visit over there. And obviously they all had an admiration for the president. So that's really
well,
cool.
If Joe Biden wins, maybe Steve Kerr should demand they get to do their 17, yes. They're short two rings, two trips to the White House, because the 86 Bears never got to go when they won the Super Bowl for some logistical reason. I don't know what was. And then they came right before Obama left. So you can retroactively do these visits. So if the players who did not get to go in that last year of Obama want to go before, they should just talk to Joe Biden. I'm sure they would be more than happy to restart the tradition of NBA players visiting the White House.
Yeah, I mean, Kamala's San Francisco Bay Area.
100%. I'm gonna text her people and suggest that. That would be a very, very popular thing to do. Yeah, post that.
I mean, if you want to put that as part of the campaign promises, you got Steph Curry back in the White House. If this
That's
happens,
right.
I'll never forget. I think we were at media day when a lot of it broke out, and Steph says, "Yeah, we're not going." And then just randomly later that day, their invitation was never there. Apparently, they weren't invited. Well,
of course, yes.
I mean, just so happens he said he's not going. But all right, let's shift over to NBA now. And first of all, what do you think of the Doc Rivers hire with the Sixers?
I think the problem with the Sixers roster wise, it's not something a single coach can fix. Like, I don't think we're like one Nick Nurse or Eric Spoelstra, like offensive genius from figuring this all out. But I think Doc is a good hire. I think he has as good a chance of getting the most out of Embiid and Simmons as any possible hire. So I feel pretty good about it. Like, I think Doc's an incredibly impressive figure. I think he has the credibility to, you know, get these guys to do more. And they clearly, like, Simmons has to be more willing to shoot, and Embiid has to get in better shape. And maybe Doc, like, people will listen to Doc. He's a guy who, you know, all-time great, one of, you know, a very, 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 very good NBA player and a coach with a ring. So I think they will have some success. I think the city of Philadelphia, I think Doc's also a good coach for the city of Philadelphia. It's a pretty brutal sports media environment. They're tough, but I think they will like him a lot. And I think he'll know how to handle it. He's a very savvy media guy. And so, yeah, I think it's a pretty good hire. I think if the choices were, as I guess, Ty Lue, D'Antoni, and Doc Rivers, I think Doc, all of which I think would have been fine choices. I think Doc's probably the best of those three for that purpose. I loved Brett Brown. I thought he was he's a good coach, not a great coach. And there just comes a time when good coaches have been there too long and it's time to move on. And this was clearly that time. And I think Doc Rivers will probably do a few things differently that'll help. And I think a reset is good, but it's not, I just don't think it's as simple as we just need one coach who's going to figure all this out. We have some structural problems, contract wise, cap wise, and roster fit wise that need to be fixed.
Yeah, I mean, if Doc handled the Boston media for that long, I think
exactly.
I'm assuming it's pretty similar. I'm not going to say
it. Yes, it is very. It's a similar vibe. Yes.
Yeah.
Very forgiving, as you can imagine.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Very very forgiving. Okay. So, I mean, listen. I you follow the NBA Twitter. You know that Warriors fans are pretty adept at making some great hypothetical trades out there.
Yep.
And Embiid and Simmons has now been – they've been on the Warriors now for 2 years. I don't know if you know
yes,
that.
Yes, there's been a very big Simmons to Golden State talk for a very long time. It's been trying to be – many people on Warriors Twitter have tried to incept that trade into happening.
Yeah, exactly. So just for a second here, put on the GM hat, and you are now – you are forced to trade one of them. Okay.
Yep.
Who are you trading?
Embiid. This is a very controversial choice.
Okay.
I think I would trade Embiid because certainly within Philly, this is controversial. Embiid is the favorite among Philly fans, more so than Simmons, although Sixers fans, what we're best at is being, we rally around our athletes when other people attack them. And because even though Ben Simmons is a two-time All-Star who made 13 All-NBA this year. They, in first team, I guess, yeah, first team all defensive. Mm-hmm. Because of that, but he still gets attacked all the time by national NBA media, most of whom are Celtics fans. We like when people defend him, but I think you would have to trade Embiid because the injury risk, a little bit older, and I think it's easier to build a modern NBA team around Ben Simmons, even without his shooting, than it is to build around a mostly back to the basket big man.
So let's say you're trading Embiid right now. And let's say the Warriors are the only trade partner you can work with. Okay, let's be realistic-ish. You know, you're not getting Steph Curry back. What do you want back in a package for Joel Embiid?
I mean, it's really hard because, like, I assume Clay is off the table.
Yeah, pretty off the table.
Yeah, I mean, the Warriors are a very hard trade partner because you have two great players.
Mm-hmm.
One historically great player who really fits in Draymond, who fits best here, and probably does not, and he and Simmons cannot play together. They're basically – Simmons is a taller, more athletic less good at like sort of less of a basketball IQ,
mm-hmm.
and less of a motor than Draymond, but they're very similar. If I could put Lock Ben Simmons in a room, I'd make him watch film of Draymond and Steph running the pick and roll over and over again. So you would I don't even know how you could possibly make the salaries work if you're not taking Draymond back and you're not taking Clay, you're not taking Steph.
It'd have to be your guy Wiggins.
That also Wiggins and Simmons like makes my heart burn. So it'd be Wiggins plus those two picks.
Yeah.
Which means we would almost certainly get LaMelo Ball, which would make me pull my hair out.
Yeah.
I think it's a very hard.
So you're just saying no. You're just saying no.
I'm saying, okay. Yeah, I don't really know what the. I can see the most realistic, if you're doing like what are pot like in the realm of maybe possible trades, if you're going to do either Simmons or Embiid, that what could you get? I mean, Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo floated this Embiid for Harden trade, which.
Interesting.
Basically, the premise being both sides, and this was in the context of D'Antoni possibly going to Philly. The problem with that is that no two people in the NBA hate each other more than Joel Embiid and Russell Westbrook.
Oh, yeah.
So, like,
and Russ like is not going anywhere, by the way.
Russ is not going. Russ is not getting traded. And so, you know, I guess the ideal would be Embiid for Bradley Beal plus whatever you'd have to do to make the salaries work would be high out. Like, Simmons. If I could pick any player that was like within a realm of somewhat realistic that you could possibly get on the Sixers, would be Bradley Beal. Because obviously, the top 10 NBA players, it's not a realistic situation where Bradley Beal would fit perfectly with either if you were trading Simmons for Beal or Embiid for Beal, you would do that. I mean, I think I do worry that if this year does not work out, one of those two is going to demand a trade. Or Jimmy Butler is going to convince Joel Embiid to.
Right.
Jimmy Butler is going to do to Embiid what Draymond did to KD.
I like it.
I'm very curious to know after they got bully balled by AD and LeBron down the stretch in Game 6. You know what? How many texts Jimmy Butler sent to Joel Embiid after the locker room?
Come on board.
Because like that, like Jimmy, like. There are some real concerns in Philly about Embiid's level of happiness because his two favorite players on the team, for good reason, were Jimmy and J.J. Redick. Mm. And losing both of them made not just his own happiness, but just it was a – those were the best plays to run was the dribble handoff between J.J. and Embiid was the best – Sixers' best play by far. If you needed a bucket, that's the play you ran. And JJ's gravity, he pulled so many players out of the paint. It gave Embiid room that was not there at all on this team. I mean, the current version of the Sixers is said, like, if you were to say, let's go get the worst collection of players to put with Embiid and Simmons, it would be this group, right? It's just, it's like no one,
right?
There is no one. I mean, if you need a basket right now, if you're like, we just need someone to get a bucket, like ISO, like, they're going to get Alec Burks, a player that you guys dropped for nothing, right? Like, our best, like, one-on-one, just get a basket. And it's like, you know, it's like Trey Burke was on the Sixers.
Yeah.
Could not get any run. And now he's, like, playing crunch time. He was playing crunch time minutes in game 6 of a Clippers-Mavs series. Like,
because you got Shake Milton, man.
Yeah. And we have Shake Milton, who I think is very good. And
yeah.
The one thing the Sixers organization has been good at is drafting – well, late, like Matisse Thybulle is good. Mm-hmm. Shake is good. Landry Shamet, who we traded for Tobias Harris.
Yeah, I was going to say,
Shamet was a very good pick. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should probably should. Like Shamet, for example, if we had. I understand the financial incentive, the financial reasoning that causes you to let JJ Redick go because we overpaid for him for a couple of years because we had extra cap space. But if you had Shamet and you let JJ go, then you have another shooter, but there is nothing. Like, no one can. Shoot, you know, as Sixers commentators say, there's no one on the team who can shoot three-pointers quickly or dribble, like the two easiest skills that people have, does not exist on the team. It's very problematic.
Right. I mean, if you're talking gravity, if I could think of a team that Embiid could end up with.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I know. I mean, if you guys want him, I think you're gonna have to figure out how to get rid of Clay. But it's just hard to find trade partners for players with big contracts. Now, Embiid's contract's not terrible because he signed that deal, his extension when he still had his injury history, but it's hard to think of. And I'm not sure that a lot of players, there's not a lot of history right now of big centers having a lot of playoff success. Jokic is a very unique version of that because he doesn't have to be set the pick in the pick and roll, which is Embiid certainly would have to.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, my dear hope is that somehow we can. The worst thing that happened to the Sixers was that Vlade Divac left the Kings, because I thought there was a chance you could have hoodwinked him into giving you Buddy Hield and someone else
Al Horford.
Or Horford. But I think that that train has left the station now.
I mean, Josh Richardson and Al Horford to the Warriors for, I mean, there's things that can be worked out.
I think if you want it, Horford actually would be a perfect Warrior in a lot of ways. Horford,
a lot of
Richardson,
money though.
Richardson, well, Richard, yeah, Horford's a lot of money, but it's three more years. We would like for that deal, if we were doing that deal, and I'm not, you'd have to do a lot of things like the summer works. And Richardson is on a great contract for one more year, and then he's
$10 million, I think.
But like,
yeah,
it's a great deal. And if you're making another run, Richardson on the Warriors, like Richardson's sort of a disaster on the Sixers because they need a spot up shooter. That's the last thing the Warriors need. So if you want Richardson and Horford, I'm positive the Sixers would take back Wiggins, a bunch of junk, and a pick. Like, yeah, we'd do that. Like,
right.
Well, I mean, Wiggins is not a good fit for us, but just to get the cap freedom from Wiggins, who's a better Wiggins on that contract, is suboptimal as it is better for the Sixers than Horford on that contract, because he's Horford sort of unplayable with us.
Unfortunately, the Warriors need wings too. It's tough. The biggest problem is usually when someone's trading away a star, it's because they're about to go into rebuild mode.
Right. So you take 700 draft picks back.
Exactly. Yeah. But the Sixers are in a win now mode. So trading them away, they need to get something back that makes them better as well. So it's a confusing situation. That's why I don't think any trades happening, at least before the season. If things go sour, I think there might be a lot of action midseason this NBA season.
Yeah.
Because that's where,
I mean, the other problem is the cap, right? We don't know what the cap's going to be.
Exactly.
It could be, and the Sixers are already over the cap with four players. And so we have huge problems. I mean, the one thing that has been out there that has been sort of it was funny because this has been brought up early, like before last season, when they were thinking about things the Sixers would do, was be to try to get Chris Paul.
Right.
And that seemed like everyone was like, that is the worst idea in the world. Do not get Chris Paul. And now the Sixers would. Like, if you could offload Horford and something else, and we have an extra first-round draft pick this year from that Tobias Harris trade that is Oklahoma City's pick. If you could put that together, like, Chris Paul on this team would be
– Oh, that would be a difference-maker.
Yeah, I also think he would have this is the thing that Jimmy Butler brought – although only somewhat, but that team needs a leader, because Embiid and Simmons are not, they are not natural on the court leaders. Like and Tobias Harris is one of the NBA great citizens, is an incredible human being, has led a lot of social justice stuff, answered every question in the bubble he got asked. And people don't remember this because the Sixers were in the bubble for such a short period of time, but was asked answered every question with asking about when Breonna Taylor's killers were going to be arrested. And he is like, he's the glue that holds that team together off the court, but he's not someone who can go get you a bucket at the end of the game, like Jimmy Butler, right? Like that is, we've seen, I was rooting for the Heat mostly because I thought whatever was going to be most painful for the Sixers front office is what I wanted. And really so
drive that dagger in.
Yes. A world in which Jimmy Butler led the Heat to the NBA championship would be as the primary option would be the most painful thing for the Sixers front office. So I came close to that, but I didn't fully achieve it.
I mean, now that I think about it, I'm just going to mark you down for saying you want Rajon Rondo next season on the Sixers. It just makes
we will probably end up with him because he is someone who can't shoot a 3-pointer.
Right.
And so,
right.
Like we would get, let's see, we would get Rajon Rondo.
Mm-hmm. Dwight needs to end up somewhere, so maybe you'll get
Dwight. We've been pretty – like, one thing Sixers have been good as we haven't had – like, it has been up until this year it sort of fractured, but, like, a very good culture, and that's what Brett Brown was good at. We haven't had a lot of knuckleheads, but – I mean, but maybe you should have knuckleheads. A team with JaVale McGee, who now has three rings. Is that right?
They mean JaVale. Yeah, that's three. Three for him.
That's three. So a team with JaVale McGee, Dwight Howard, J.R. Smith, and Dion Waiters just won the NBA championship. So maybe we're doing this all wrong.
You should get LeBron too. That might help.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, I guess the Warriors sort of pioneered this when Bob Myers and Kerr were like, you know what? We're so good. We're going to bring JaVale and Nick Young on the team.
Yeah.
And we'll see if we can win anyway. And they did.
DeMarcus Cousins.
JaVale also gets a bad rap because JaVale was a superb teammate for the Warriors, as I understand it. He just was the original – I think he was the original Shaq and a fool person. I think he created the game. But, his, you know, obviously he shouldn't be held – like none of us, he should be held accountable for how he was 10 years ago.
I really hope that's not how I'm held accountable. And, yeah, I think the Warriors were great with that, with DeMarcus Cousins as well. They felt
– Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I forgot about that.
But that's, you know, as you were saying, leader. They had Iguodala. Yeah. They had Steph. They had Clay's even a very, you know, different type of leader. David West was incredible for the Warriors. So
when I interviewed Coach Kerr, I asked him who would be the best politician on the Warriors. And I thought the answer would be Steph, because Steph is just like so charismatic and everyone loves Steph. But he said David West, hands down. He was like, if David West wasn't a basketball player, he'd be president of the United States. And I remember reading all kinds of things about how all the Warriors just thought he was like the most interesting, fascinating guy. And it was very, very cool. He said that, Kerr did say that he would want Draymond to run his campaign because he would be the one who could get all the dirty stuff done.
That's really funny. Yeah, Iguodala would be handling finances.
That's right,
then,
yeah.
You know, it is David West. We have a show called Race in America, and it just goes over everything happening in terms of society and systemic racism. And David West was on with Steve Kerr. David West was fantastic. And it is – the players respected him so much. Even to the point where I used to ask the question to the players, if you're stuck on a desert island and you need one human being to survive from your team, like who's going to keep you alive? And David West was hands down the pick. It was pretty obvious. It was David West is going to keep me alive.
The funniest thing about Kerr that you brought him up is, you know, cause obviously Kerr and Brett Brown are, you know, Brett Brown coached Kerr on the Spurs. And so they've been there for a very long time. And there was a very funny meme going around Philly sports. It was, I think, like 2015, 2016, when the Warriors came to town, and it's like a picture of Kerr and a picture of Brett Brown, and said, Brett Brown looks like Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr had to coach the Sixers for the last 5 years.
With the hair, it was like,
Oh my God. Steve Kerr's like, looks like, you know, he's like well put together and he's in shape. And Brett Brown's hair's all messed up and sort of beaten up and looking tired.
That is really funny. That is very funny. Brett Brown's accent is the thing I'm going to miss the most.
Yeah.
That thing was just, it was actually, that's a national treasure in itself. All right. I'm going to ask you some tweets here. I just want to get your thoughts on these before I let you go. All right, here we go. May 28th.
I'm nervous about this. I'm not going to lie.
you said some stuff that, no. May 28th, 2015. More fun to watch, 2015 Steph Curry or 2001 Allen Iverson, ? And you put that out there, so I do want to get your answer. And now, one caveat everyone must know. Correct me if I'm wrong. You were at Georgetown at the same time as Allen Iverson.
Yes, we were the same year at Georgetown.
Okay.
I would say 2001 Iverson was more fun to watch because it just from a pure – like basketball – like. What the NBA was in 2001 and what it was in 2015, it's almost two different games. But Iverson was, the game was so much rougher. Iverson was so small. He was so relentless. And I am biased because I am a Philadelphia 76ers fan who went to Georgetown. And so
just a little bit biased.
Yeah. So in that sense, I would say 2001 Iverson, but you can't go wrong with that choice.
Yeah. I do love to just imagine what Allen Iverson would be like in today's NBA. First of all, he would launch about 10 threes a game.
Yeah, I know that. And he would be a better three-point shooter because he would have grown up shooting threes, right? That's always the hard part about these comparisons is, I mean, Jordan would shoot threes hard, right?
That's exactly. Everyone's like, well, Michael Jordan was a terrible three-point shooter. That's because no one cared about the three-point shot back then. Okay, so you're going to go with Iverson. I mean, growing up, I idolized Allen Iverson because the crossover and everything. He was just cool. So I could see that, but I could also see kids that were my age watching Steph Curry.
Oh, for sure.
For now on, Steph Curry is that human for the rest of their lives.
Yeah. I mean, go to any playground anywhere in America and there are like 8-year-olds trying to throw up 30 footers, because of Steph, right? Kids adore him because Iverson was like, I think both of them, this is a good comparison, if I do say so myself, because like if either Allen Iverson or Steph Curry walked into the gym at the Y you play your Sunday game at,
yeah,
it would make sense. You wouldn't think, you know, LeBron walks in, AD walks in, Giannis walks in. You're like, what the hell is that? But like, right. Steph could be good. He could be amazing. He could just be a normal guy. And Iverson was the same way. They are the same size as a lot of the rest of us. And they look like the guys you play basketball with. Just they're, right. They don't feel like they're from the Monsters. They actually feel like they could be on our team on Space Jam. And,
exactly.
So I think that's why kids gravitated to both of them.
Absolutely. And just, yeah, they're not high flyers. They're shooting the ball and dancing on people. So, all right. So I love that tweet. All right. So don't worry. You don't have anything bad. February 27th, 2016. This is the night of Steph Curry's famous bang, bang game winner, Mike Breen at OKC. And this is your quote. Watching Steph Curry at this point in his career is 90% of why I moved to the Bay Area.
I think my wife, who's from the Bay Area, if she ever saw that tweet, would feel not good about it. That was definitely maybe 90% of why I was enjoying living in the Bay Area at that moment. But I think I need to rewrite that one for the sake of history and domestic tranquility. And that may not be – that's not why I moved here, but it's a reason why I'm glad I moved here. So that's what
I'm saying. We'll give her 90%. We'll give her 90%. This can be
10. Steph can have 10. He can have 10%. That's fair.
Yeah. It was just a typo, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Obviously, your wife is going to listen to this, and she'll understand now. She's been thinking about that since February 27th.
She loves sports, so yes.
all right, this is your final one. This one's spicy, okay?
Okay.
May 11th, 2016. Warriors can win a couple games without Curry. I don't think they can win a game without Draymond.
Yeah, that was very spicy. That was very spicy. I mean, if you like, that is so. This that what was the day? This was 2016.
Yeah, 2016 May.
So this was the 73 win. Yeah, this was the end of the 73 win season.
And that is your probably first round of the playoffs, or no, that'd be second round of the playoffs probably.
And that's when he got hurt, right? So right. he got hurt in the Portland series,
mm-hmm.
right?
Well, yeah, so he came back for the Portland series.
And so who did they play in the first round?
Was that the Houston series when they're all
maybe
together now. Yeah.
But I remember he came – yeah, it was – he missed – I think he went down in, like, game two, and then they ended up sweeping Houston or whoever it was in the first round. And then he came back against Portland. He had that unbelievable second half, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I'm mixing all of them together now. This is embarrassing. I should apologize for this to everyone listening that's going to yell at me, but –
but I think he did whatever he came back, he was like really, it was rough, like in the first half, and he was pretty bad. And then he was unbelievable. Like it was one of those like 30-point second halves or something, he put the game away. I mean, I think that was probably an overstatement. I'll admit to that. But
hyperbole is it happens on Twitter. Yeah.
It was on Twitter. It's the first time ever. But I would say that probably that Draymond in that season was sort of the engine that drove the car. Like mm-hmm. I remember when the streak was about to go against Boston, they were about to lose and Draymond basically put the team on his back at the end. I mean, one of the things lost for history on that team is Draymond's game 7 performance against the Cavs.
I mean,
where
it was sensational.
If Kyrie had not made that three, Draymond, that would have gone down in history as one of the all-time great clutch performances. And so, like, that Draymond was unbelievable. And hyperbole on my part, but there was an essential truth I don't think that is a championship team, and certainly not a 73-win team without Draymond. Like, he was the, in a pre-KD Warriors era, he was often the most important, if not the best player on the court. Once you got KD, then you can do anything. Right?
It wasn't – I mean, the only catch was that was the unanimous MVP Steph season. So that's the only reason it could be like that's a little too much hyperbole. But at the same time, it really is not crazy to say that team – Draymond Green, I know I'm a huge Klay Thompson fan and the world is a Klay Thompson fan, but Draymond Green was the second most important player on that team that year.
Yeah, and I think that's the right way of saying that, for sure.
He shot 39% from three that year. He was incredible. In that Portland series you're talking about, he was an absolute monster. So it's not that crazy.
And you can't put, like, the lineup of death, small ball, doesn't exist without Draymond, right? Like, if you don't have Draymond, you have to play Bogut or Festus Ezeli down the stretch, and that's a very, very – you lose all the matchup stuff. in there. So yeah, I mean, Draymond, I agree with that. Draymond was incredibly important in that team. Steph was better. Klay is obviously a, you know, Klay is Klay. I mean, right. one of the great shooters of all time. And also one of the great clutch players of all time, considering his
Game six
Oklahoma yeah. City performance. You know, and also lost to history was if Klay had not busted his knee in the last game, they were going to win that game against the Raptors and take that thing to game seven if Klay had not gotten hurt. And that, like, Klay's performance in that game was, I mean, it's obviously overshadowed by the fact the Raptors won the series and he blew out his knee, but I mean, what he did to put that team on his back with Steph was struggling a little bit without KD was unbelievable. And I thought he was going to put that thing away.
I mean, you can't count out Klay going off and that. Yeah, that was insane. It's unfortunate for NBA fans that we didn't get a chance to see what would have happened with that. But it wasn't that crazy, that tweet. Every now and then you look back and you go, huh, I was being a little hyperbolic at that moment.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. Dan, I really appreciate you joining us. I know Warriors fans are going to absolutely love this. And, you know, actually, I would love for you to tell Warriors fans where they can find you right now. What do you implore them to do? Here's your chance. Speak to everyone.
Yep. So forget about where you can find me. But if you have any questions about how to get involved in this election, where, you know, whether you're registered to vote, where your voting location is, if you go to votesaveamerica.com, we have information, particularly for folks here in California, on all the things on our very, very long ballot that will help you understand what's at stake and what you can do. And so go to votesaveamerica.com, figure out how to get involved in the election, figure out what's on the ballot, and figure out what the best and safest way to vote is here in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah, and I've tried to stress this many times on this pod, but please vote. Please, please, please vote. Please Everyone vote. And census, do the census and vote, you know, all both of those things.
Yeah.
Dan, thank you again. Really appreciate it. And if you listen to the Warriors Running Plays podcast right now, make sure to subscribe and also just to leave a rating and give us your thoughts. Dan, have a nice day.
All right. Thank you, man. This was super fun.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.